This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for November the 5th, 2021. This is episode number 83. Our top stories today: Volkswagen ID.5 makes its debut, a Lucid Air deliveries have officially begun, and Volvo introduces three new trucks. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the classy and cultivated Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the maximal Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic halls of AutoSpec Studios. He also puts together absolutely breathtaking videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask you all, please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications there. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody and good morning. See what we're driving this week. Let's kick it off. Kyle, you have had a chance to drive the Volkswagen ID.4 all-wheel drive. I know you've driven the Pro and the Pro Performance, I believe it is, before.
I've driven every version of the rear-wheel drive, but not yet the all-wheel drive.
So I drove this before you did. That's crazy.
That's right. Everyone did, because I was in Europe when this car launched in the U.S. And so you and Brandt, so you went, Brandon for AutoSpec went, I think Tom may have even driven ID.4 all-wheel drive. Have you, Tom? No.
No, I didn't. I didn't make that. I had something, I think, with Porsche that week.
Okay. So anyway, yes, it's my first time driving this car, but I mean, I've driven Q4 e-tron, which is pretty much the same thing underneath. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I'll tell you like a half a second thing about it. We just put up a video 34 minutes ago, and it's an experiment on out-of-spec reviews, which is like, you know, this car always does huge numbers for us. Everyone's so interested in this car. So we're like, it just arrived. What do you want us to do with it? And then we're going to try and do as many things as people comment on this video with this car, either through, you know, TikTok or YouTube or some of our other video streaming platforms that we use. We're going to try and do everything. It's just more of a little challenge. It should be kind of fun. Overall, car seems great. I mean, it's really no different than ID.4 rear-wheel drive. I mean, look, Tom and I, and Dominic, we all like the ID.4, but not because it's really impressive in any one category. It has okay range. It has okay acceleration. It has okay styling. It has okay, you know, technology in the car. But it just is, the entire package is, I would say, more than the sum of its parts. It's extremely easy to live with every day with the brand new software on it. It's so snappy, zero lag, really awesome infotainment now, great driver assistance standard. And then you just get to the value. The base rear-wheel drive basically is $40,000. Then you get a $7,500 tax credit. Then you get a state incentive if you live in a state with that. And then you get 3 years of free charging on Electrify America. And so can you beat that value for such a premium, quiet, comfortable car that has all the room in the world? The answer is no. That's why we love it. And, you know, would I personally own an ID.4? Probably not. It's really not for me, because I like something a little spicy and weird and interesting. But when anyone comes to me and says, Kyle, I'm just looking for a car, not even just an electric car, I just go, just go get an ID.4. And because it's like, you charge it at home and it's so easy. So that's my take on that vehicle. And now with all-wheel drive, it's quicker. It's 5.4 seconds to 60, but I haven't had it at a full charge yet. And that's where it unlocks full power. So it's fine. I never thought the last one was unbelievably slow for daily driving. It was faster than a Honda CR-V. It's faster than a equivalent RAV4. And like, again, the target audience for this car is not the EV enthusiast. It's your general buyer. And I thought it was fine. Someone had asked about the traction mode. I'll explain that for 2 seconds. I won't derail the whole conversation. The rear motor is a permanent magnet motor in this car. It's the exact same 150 kilowatt unit out of the rear wheel drive car. By the way, they both have the 77 kilowatt hour usable battery pack. And no, the new charging software hasn't come to the US yet, but hopefully at some point soon. I already tested the new curve on the small battery pack with mid battery pack in Europe. So you can go to Out of Spec Reviews and see the charging curve on ID3. 58 kilowatt hour usable, whatever that pack is. Rear permanent magnet motor, front induction motor. The nice thing about having an induction motor up front is because you don't need to run current through it to make it work or spin, or I should say when it's spinning, it doesn't generate any current because there's no magnets attached to the rotor. You have essentially a motor that can be completely shut off. And so this is how the car does such great in the EPA cycle. We're going to run it through our 70 mile per hour test because it's really just the extra weight of the front motor. Essentially, anytime you're at light throttle, it's just rear wheel drive, and the front motor, when you tip into it, starts to help. The traction mode in the car, according to my ears, sounds like the front motor stays on all the time, which is great for snow and ice. I know I derailed the conversation. That was a long explanation, but I figured for our audience who didn't quite know, how it works, that's how it'd go. Someone is asking the most important question in the audience. So this is my Starbucks drink. This is actually, I got one last night, so I'm finishing up this morning. It's a, they wanted to know the order. We get this. You cannot believe how many times a day we get this question, at least 30 to 50 a day. So it's a, so let's just save this clip and we'll put it up as a separate video. Sorry, Blue's even excited. So hold on, let me yell at him. All right, so it's a Trenta strawberry acai with light ice, no water, and no inclusions, but still shaken. No lemonade. That's the order.
God, you're like a Starbucks James Bond, right? Very specific, right?
It has to be. Sometimes I go to a different Starbucks and then they don't make it the way mine does. And I'm like, oh, that's not so great. But they see us rolling up and they know we're in a different car every day we go through just to try and confuse them. But we roll up to the order. They say, we already got it. And then we just pull up.
Good. Okay. Oh, Tom, you're muted.
Tom and Dom are both muted.
Sorry, guys. It's okay. Let me cut him for a sec. So as you were talking about how much you love the ID4 and said that I love it and Dom loves it, which is true, there were a bunch of comments, people saying, just get a Model Y. You know, Model Y is a better deal. I was watching those comments. And here's the thing. It depends on what you're looking for in a car. For some people, the Model Y is a better deal. But for a lot of people that are just looking for transportation to haul the family around, to do it efficiently, the ID4 is a better deal, guys. It costs a lot less. It does everything that the Model Y has. Doesn't have the supercharger network. A lot of people don't care about that. A lot of people that buy this car aren't road tripping with it. They're at most driving 60, 70 miles in a day. And maybe once every month they go 150, 200 miles. And it still has enough range for them. So, you know, there is no one perfect car in each segment. Like, oh, just get a Model Y. And we get that a lot with Teslas in general. And look, I own a Tesla. Kyle owns a Tesla. We love what Tesla's doing. We love Tesla. But we also have to admit that it isn't the best at everything for everybody. You know, it was the best choice for me, and that's why I got a Model 3. But, you know, the ID4 really is a great family mover, and it costs a lot less than the Model Y now. And that means a lot to a lot of people. It's, you know, that extra $10,000. And if you want to factor in the federal tax credit, if you qualify for it, and it can be a lot more than a Model Y. It's the Model Y is out of the reach of a lot of American families. And the ID4 falls within that bracket for a lot of people of affordability. So that's why we love it. It does everything great. It puts a smile on your face. Like Kyle said, which was great, it doesn't do anything like the best. It's not the best accelerating car. It doesn't have the best software. It doesn't have the most cargo space. You know, it doesn't have the best features. but everything it does really well. So it makes the whole package a great car for the family, and that's why we're high on it. I've said this before; it was my favorite new introduction, I think, in 2021. And you know, and I did like the Mustang Mach-E a lot. I think Ford maybe just didn't quite take that to the finish line what they could have done with it. But the ID.4 is a great car, and I think a lot of people really are going to appreciate that. And I think it's going to be the car that pulls people out of ICE vehicles like Subaru Crosschecks, Toyota RAV4s, Honda CRVs. Those are the cars that all the families are buying that you see in everyone's driveway. And this will get them into an EV, in my opinion, and do everything that those vehicles can do at an affordable price.
Hey, Tom, I was just at this Volkswagen event in North Carolina this week where I purposely didn't drive ID.4 all-wheel drive. It was like a family lineup. They had one of everything. And I just spent time in the new GTI and Golf R because I'm a performance driving enthusiast. But when we did a little ID.4 presentation, first off, I just wanted to make a note, which I thought was really neat. The entire week, the entire presentation, ID.4 was front and center before any of the rest of their lineup. Right now, they only have one EV, but you can tell even in their messaging, their communication, their printed material, ID.4 is front and center. They're pushing the EV. They're like, look, this is better value than our Taos and Tiguan, etc. And I thought the most important statistic or the most interesting was 9 out of 10 new ID.4 owners. By the way, they're sold out into like next year. They're like, we can't get enough of them because of chip shortages. 8 or 9 out of 10 new ID.4 buyers come from ICE. And that was their whole goal. They were like, look, we want, and they're, they said we could have pitched, in marketing to go after Tesla, after Mach-E, et cetera. They said, nope, we went after CRV, RAV4, the general small thing. And I think it's working for them. And even they're like, people are coming in out of their Tiguan leases and going for ID.4 now. And that is probably the first, I would say, traditional automaker that has such a hard push to sell their electric vehicles. At the end of the day, we see Ford really going hard with their Mach-E, but I don't think we've seen it to the point of Volkswagen pushing ID.4.
They go just as hard with the Bronco, per se.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but ID.4 is Volkswagen's flagship car right now.
Absolutely. They literally told us at the press drive, we want this to be the next Beetle. This is the car we want, 10 years from now to say we sold millions and millions of them, not, hundreds of thousands of them. So, this is their global car. They're making it in 5 different factories around the world. They'll be able to churn out hundreds of thousands of them a year. This is, they're all in on ID.4. And I think they did a good job with it. I think if they continue to push it and they continue to put them out there and they're on the lots and people get a chance to sit in them and drive them and see what it feels like, they're going to sell tons of them. Now, I want to comment also on a couple of the comments here. So Pete Bremy, a friend of the show,
hey, Pete,
said that, the lack of one pedal driving is a deal breaker for me. And then somebody else responded that, no, it has one pedal driving if you put it in B mode. That's really not one pedal driving. It makes the regen much stronger than if you don't put it in B mode, but it's still not a true one pedal driving, even in the B mode. The ID.4 doesn't have true one pedal driving.
Right. And it's interesting because the people buying this car won't make that comment. So the people buying this car haven't driven an EV before, or they've driven something with less regen. So it's a very valid point if you know what one-pedal driving is. If you love the E-pedal on the Leaf or something and you just simply cannot live without it, then absolutely, it's a valid comment. I'm just saying, no one's walking in to go, I'd have the car, but no one-pedal driving.
Yeah, and but also, it would be nicer with it.
Oh, it would be nicer, but the people buying this car don't know what one-pedal driving is. So, and then no disrespect. No, they might do, but they just don't care, right? They might have seen a YouTube video about what it is. They might have experienced it, but the typical buyer of this car doesn't care. It would be nice to have that switched on with software and over-the-air update. I'm sure they can, surely.
They can, yeah. I already asked them about that, and they said if our customers ask for it, we can add that. But, Martin, that plays right into what you just said to what me and Kyle said, is that they're not going after the EV enthusiasts with the ID.4. They're going after RAV4, CRV, Subaru Crosstrek owners, and it's working because that's who's buying these vehicles now.
Yeah, Yeah, and actually, as we were talking about on our group chat this morning, just a little $1,000 price increase overnight for Tesla again, 3 and Y, didn't touch S and X. But it's $57,990, no tax credit, no negotiation with the dealer. It's $58,000 to get into the Y just with the long range. And so if you want that car, we talk about the Tesla stretch, and people will do it. People are financing over like 5 or 6 years. And if you don't want that car, it's simply not even in your universe. Not even, like, you know what it is, but it's not even a conversation. Because right, it's so much money for families. Like, a lot of the people that want one are going to get one, no doubt about it. But
so Alyssa's brother lives in North Dakota, Minot, like in the middle of nowhere. And he drove Mach-E, Model Y, and ID4. And he was like, you know, this was before I even spoke to him. And, you know, his mom, Alyssa's mom, has an ID4. So anyway, he wants an electric car. He's in the Air Force. He's really into EVs. Cool, really cool dude. He has an ID4 all-wheel drive on order because he was like, the Model Y drove like crap. I'm like, yes, it really is so rough for daily driving. Right. I've made this comment many times in videos. And the ID4 is just soft and supple and nice to get around. Now, when it gets to performance driving, the Y is going to smoke it. But you know, we can do all these comparisons. I'm actually going to do ID4 versus Model Y. I'm going to do an hour plus long review of this ID4 all-wheel drive. So just stay tuned. We'll have a range test up here on Inside EVs on the car. So over the next 7 to 14 days when I have this car, it's just going to be a lot of videos with it because everyone watches them.
You know, the ID4 is going to be one of those cars that I'm going to start saying this more and more. The minute Tesla open up the supercharging network, I think it's a no-brainer. And I know it's only 10 superchargers in the Netherlands right now, but it's one of those cars that actually you can road trip so easily with. You're just relying on the charging networks now. But once Tesla open up, which could be, you know, next year and could be never, get a trial at the minute in Holland, then all of these kind of cars all of a sudden take on, for me, a different place because they're road trippers just without even thinking about it, the one you can use the superchargers.
It's so it's like $43,675, I believe, for the Volkswagen ID4 Pro all-wheel drive. And like you were saying, Martin, the Model Y is now just shy of $58,000. That's a huge spread.
Well, you know, and the Volkswagen gets all the credits and Tesla doesn't.
Well, I mean, they might by the end of the year.
Yeah, 3 years free charging as well, which is a really big deal.
3 years free charging, really that's good. Deal. Yeah. I mean, it's just a great deal. I have a friend with he drives a Nissan Rogue right now, and I think I have him convinced to get the ID4. I can't wait to actually. I don't see enough of them on the road here in Tallahassee, Florida.
Everywhere here now. They're like,
oh, really?
They're getting so popular here. I see all the old Leafs slowly dying away and all the ID4s coming around.
Yeah. So that's where they're all going then.
They're always at the Electrify America stations here. I mean, I seem like I always, when I do a charging test, there's either an ID4 or a Mach-E at every Electrify America site that I go to these days. It's crazy. And Randy's, I just want, let me pull another comment up here. Monster Cameron says, guys, y'all never mentioned crazy insurance premium on a Tesla. And that he's paying $310 a month.
Yikes.
What have you been up to?
I have a Model 3, and it's no more expensive than any of my other cars at price point. So I don't know what insurance you have over there or what your driving record looks like, but you better shop around because it shouldn't be any more expensive than another car in that price segment. You know, if you price it against a BMW 3 Series that has the same cost as your Model 3, it should be virtually identical.
Correction, Tesla 310 versus 110, he says. Put that on the screen. That's a lot. And Tesla's rolling out its own insurance program too, right?
Okay. Well, yeah.
I would want that. I don't want Tesla tracking my driving and then basing my insurance off of my individual driving habits.
Well, not yours. No. Hell no.
No. Hell no. It would be so weird to be like, that. You just sit on the highway forever, and then all of a sudden you're sideways at 100 miles an hour.
You are. There is not enough money in the world when they know how you drive.
Allegedly.
I meant on the track. I meant on track.
Hey, Kyle. I did want to ask, what'd you think about the ride in the ID4 all-wheel drive compared to the Pro? Did you feel any difference at all there?
Yeah, big difference. I think it's way harsher. It's way more buttoned down, way sportier, and I don't think I like it as much as the rear-wheel drive. But I'm going to go. So we have a first edition here. So I'm gonna get out of the first edition and into the all-wheel drive. We're gonna do a whole video comparing rear-wheel drive to all-wheel drive, drag race, turning circle, the efficiency on the same loop of road, you name it. We're gonna try and do it. And like I said, everyone watches ID4 videos. So even if we make 20 videos with this car, we'll just roll them out over the next 2 or 3 months.
So which ID4 all-wheel drive do you have? Do you have the top trim?
It's a Maxi Max one. Thing's 51 grand.
Oh, okay. That's the one with the, I can't remember the name of the
Pro
the
S trim. Gradient.
Right. You have the gradient trim. So that's got the bigger wheel. So the ride's going to be maybe a little bit rougher, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to make too much difference. I have to check tire pressures on this car because it just got here. So they kind of just feel like you're a little bit high for range. But like Tesla too, I always back down pressures from usually what EV automakers say. And I'll give up a little range for some more cornering grip as well as, some more ride comfort.
Right.
Yeah.
I need to turn up my tires on my Spark EVF. I think they're down to like 26.
It's getting cold. Pressures will drop and just top them up as it keeps getting colder.
I need to get out of the car. So let's move on from that real quick. Tom, were you driving anything electric this week?
No, nothing other than my Model 3. I didn't get anything new this week. Next week, I'm going to get the rear-wheel drive Taycan is going to get dropped off for a week loan, so I'll be able to comment a little on that. Kyle's had that already, we'll be able to talk about that next week. So, yeah, no, nothing new over here, Don, not this week.
But, okay. I believe that you did want to tell us about Zip Charge a little bit.
Yeah, well, I did that post at the Global Climate Summit. A new startup in the UK called Zip Charge introduced a portable a charger called the Go, it's interesting. They haven't revealed all the details on it yet, but it's very compact. You can see in the picture there, it's like the size of a carry-on suitcase. It weighs less than 50 pounds. They're going to have it in versions that are 4 kilowatt hour up to 8 kilowatt hour, and it's a very intelligent piece of equipment. It has AI. It geofences, so if somebody were to steal it and take it a few hundred feet from the car, it disables the unit, and then you can track it. They're also going to offer insurance that if anybody ever did steal it from you, they replace it. We've seen a lot of these pop up recently, these portable, battery packs. And they got my attention because I think that they're focusing on some interesting things. They're really making it, vehicle to grid capable. They're talking about possibly setting up future leasing programs where it's very affordable. Maybe you could even rent it for the day. There might be locations, say in city centers, where there's lockers where they're stored and they're all plugged in, charging overnight where electricity is less expensive, so they can rent it to you for relatively cheap. So they're looking at the whole ecosystem of charging and not just saying, oh, we're making this for AAA or whatever. They're really trying to be future focused and say, well, what else could this do in the future? I think they have a chance at doing something here with this product.
And it rolls along nicely too, like a suitcase, and it's like 50 pounds, I think. And how many kilowatt hours?
Yeah, so the smallest version that we see here weighs less than 50 pounds, and it has 4 kilowatt hour of energy. It charges at 32 amps, so you'll empty it in half an hour, let's say.
Pace looks so good, by the way.
Exactly, it's stylish, Kyle.
Yeah.
So like I said, the thing that really struck me about the company was they're not just making this for roadside assistance. It is going to be something that people can buy affordably or lease, and they have some interesting ideas what they're going to come out with it in the future. Now, all that hasn't been, I spoke with them off the record on some of their business models that are coming up in the future. And I think that they're onto something with some of the programs that they're going to be used this for. They're going to be able to integrate it into, different utility programs. It's not just going to be what you see as a portable device that charges your EV on this, and that's all it does. So, I think I think this is a company we need to keep an eye on.
Awesome. One of my friends tweeted about this, and she said, oh, this is amazing. It's so good if you haven't got off-road parking and you live in a block of flats. And then all the replies were pretty hardcore, saying, this is a terrible idea. What a terrible product. And I think she just pitched it with one, like one use case. Right. And I kind of agree, right? If you own an EV with a 70 kilowatt hour, 80 kilowatt hour pack or whatever, and you live in an apartment or a block and you haven't got off-road parking, and this has got 4 kilowatt hours of storage, and then you see a post online and someone says, oh, this is amazing, it solves that problem. It doesn't solve that problem. It would be useful in some use cases to, you know, to be able to wheel it downstairs, take it back upstairs. If you've got an e-bike or something that you can't get in the elevator or you can't get to, or that would be fantastic. But there, I think, are a lot of reasons to have a smart packaged battery, especially if some of the DC to AC conversion is quite clever. If I could just have that in my garage plugged in all the time, and now that I've got some solar, just to be able to soak up some energy rather than go back to the grid, and then perhaps later in the day, my house could use it. But like, that's pretty sophisticated stuff. Don't know if it'll do that. But even just if you're going away for the weekend, I don't know, like to a cabin or something, or you like to do adventuring and your car doesn't do vehicle to load or vehicle to you know, to kind of X really to get energy out of it, but this would. It's not going to add a ton of weight to your car. It won't take a lot of range off. There's some really interesting use cases for tech like this going forward.
But it's 4 kilowatt hours?
Yeah. The smallest
four
one,
or
Kyle.
Eight.
You could, 4 or 8.
So, how does it compare to Spark Charge? Because Spark Charge DC fast charge at 30
right,
kilowatts.
So Spark Charge DC fast charges at rates up to 20 kilowatts, but you have to have high pack voltage to get the 20 kilowatts.
So let's say you get 12 dead.
Yeah, I'm only pulling 12 or 13, so it's not that much faster. This is 7.6 or so. But this is much less. Like Spark Charge, you wouldn't buy that as a consumer. It's like $15,000. Like you would lease it, and it's only really, it's mostly going to be used for roadside assistance companies. But this is a consumer product that, you know, the price, while price isn't settled, they're talking at selling it at somewhere, you know, perhaps, and I'm just guessing, under $2,000. And leasing it at a very reasonable monthly rate. So, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, they have a good business model that I think we're going to hear more about the company and some of the ideas and things that they have planned for this in the future. Don't just pigeonhole it and saying, okay, it's 4 kilowatt hours. I can get 20 miles of range. That's useless to me if I live in a flat. I think that they have.
I'm pigeonholing it right now.
Well, you certainly
you said not to.
The minute you say not to, I have to do it.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a forward-thinking company. The two founders have been in the EV space for many years and lots of experience, and you know, have, you know, done the focus groups and talked to people about what they need and what they would what would help them get into an electric vehicle. And I think part of the driving force behind developing this product was to help mass adoption, to help get people that couldn't get into an EV get into an EV. So let's see.
I don't think
it's going to make any difference to an EV ownership. If 4 kilowatt hours makes a difference between buying a car and not, you're not buying the right car. Buy one with a bigger battery.
I mean, that Honda E's got a pretty small battery, though. So, I mean, it might make a difference to Honda E owners.
It's also got a pretty small trunk to haul it around in, though, too.
Yeah.
You can see it in the back. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see we're showing a picture of the zip charge thing in the back of a Honda E. And there's not a whole lot of, I mean, it fills it up pretty much.
Right? I like it. I like the handle, the grab handle, the wheels. I think, you know, batteries, energy, EVs, it all sort of just sits around people's thoughts more than it ever used to. So that's interesting.
Yeah, they'll sell as many as they can make, I'm sure. But will it actually be useful to people? I don't think so. We'll see.
Yeah. So two questions in the comment. Tom, does it charge its weight? Do you get more miles of range versus its weight penalty? Yeah. You won't use 4 kilowatt hours hauling around 45 pounds. So, it does. And also how fast, I think there was one, how fast does it charge? So it charges at, I think, up to 7.4 kilowatts. So you would empty the small one in less than 30 minutes.
Yeah, and but rather than towing,
the 8 kilowatt hour one would take you like an hour and 15 minutes or so to add 8 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, because some EVs can't be towed. Some EVs have to be, you know, on dolly wheels or trailered or whatever, a low loader. So actually, you know, for recovery services to say, hey, you need 20 miles to get to a DC fast charger, you know, have this for half an hour. It's a good shout.
You just throw a big old gas generator in the back of that truck, fire
How
that thing
dare
up,
you?
5 minutes, you're down.
How dare you?
Not wrong. Or just put it on the back of the truck and tow it 20 miles. That'll take less time.
That'd take half an hour to get it on the lorry.
Not to change the topic or anything, but...
No, you should do. We need to move on.
Yeah, let's change the topic. So Nathan Green just mentions in the comment that, Tom, if you're up for a road trip, they're supposed to have an EV6, a Kia EV6, at the auto show in Albany, New York this weekend. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Cool.
Have you seen that in person yet, Tom?
No, I haven't. I've seen the IONIQ 5, but I haven't seen the EV6 in person. Okay. So that's a good tip. Let me see what's going on this weekend. Yeah.
So if you're in the Albany, New York area, there's something to check out if you're into the EV6, which, you
that's
know.
A good drive for me, but my in-laws only live about an hour away from there in Vermont. So maybe I'll pitch that to Meredith, a road trip to see her parents and stop over at Albany for a few hours in between. Right.
Is a few points there, for you as well. Go see the in-laws. That's a good few points, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Is it cold up there yet, Tom?
It's cold here.
Okay.
It was in the 20s this morning.
So maybe we should share a couple of cold weather tips if you got them. You've already gotten some snow up there too in Colorado too, right, Kyle?
Yeah, we've had a couple of days of snow, and it's, I think, just about below freezing right now still.
So how does that impact you, like, for new EV owners? Like, what are some quick things that you should keep in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really good topic to bring up, and maybe we'll just keep bringing it up through the winter as well, because, you know, while we have a lot of electric vehicle experts on the channel that know what to expect and have been through the last 10 winters with their electric car, with such mass adoption, we're going to see a lot of posts. The first one being, somehow, some way, electric car owners just in general don't understand tires on cars. Because in every forum posting, it's, why is my tire light on? And I'm like, this is no different than your car last year. And essentially, when it gets cold, you know, the air compresses, so there's less, you know, air in your tire, which means the pressure goes down. So you just top it up.
Yeah.
There's step one. Step two is, like, if you leave your car outside, it will not charge very fast, and you probably won't get regen if it's below freezing. Lithium crystallizes when it gets charged below freezing. So if you start to pull away and you're like, whoa, I had one pedal driving, or I had friction brakes, you hear the friction brakes going when you're using one pedal driving, like Leaf will blend friction brakes, for example, just to give you the same user experience. It's purely because the battery just won't charge when it's cold and it has to warm up. And same with DC fast charging. If you are on a road trip and, for example, you have the option to either charge at night when you're rolling into your hotel, or you're like, I'll wake up in the morning and charge before I head out. Don't do that, because that can take you 1 to 3 to 4 hours, depending on the car and how much it thermal throttles, to plug in. If it's really cold outside, wait for the battery heaters to even allow the car to start charging, and then slowly, slowly ramping up. So the road tripping ones, you've seen this in my videos. In the summertime, no problem. I just leave the car outside with a low state of charge and charge it in the morning. Wintertime, though, you get that thing topped up at night, because two things happen. The car won't charge when it's below freezing battery pack, and it has to run battery heaters. Like, if you plug in a Tesla in cold weather, it'll just sit at 0 kilowatts. You'll hear the motors going, trying to warm everything up on Model 3 and Y, and it won't charge. The second is, you have less available usable energy out of your battery pack. So you'll actually see a big dip overnight. If you leave the car with 70% state of charge, you may wake up and it has 62% state of charge. It's not actually that much lower. The energy's in there, just can't be used. So if you warm it up, you'll actually get some of that back. And Tesla does a really good job of visualizing this with a blue section of the battery pack and a green section of the battery pack. So the big tips to know in wintertime really are, keep your battery warm. Charge before the mornings, because you want to get that juice in there. And if you're charging at home, try and set your car to start charging so that it completes right before you leave. This way, hopefully you'll warm up your battery pack. You'll get the most amount of usable energy in there, and your efficiency will be higher because it's not having to warm everything up at the start of every drive. So, Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, so your point about setting your charging, delayed charging, so that it's charging right before you leave in the morning, that's a great point. If people don't want to do that, you can just set preconditioning so the car will fully recharge when you get home at night. But then at an hour or so before you leave, if your car has preconditioning features, you set it to precondition. What happens is the car's going to wake itself up an hour or so before you leave. It's going to warm up the cabin. It's going to warm up the battery in some instances, depending on how cold it gets. But it'll get it nice and warm. And the one big point, the safety issue that I like to remind everybody about, Kyle touched on this earlier, is the fact that your regenerative braking is going to be much less the force when the vehicle is really cold, especially when you first get in it. So you may be expecting the car to regen and slow you down, and you ease off that accelerator, and you almost get the feeling that it accelerated. It didn't, but you get that feeling because you're expecting it to slow down, and instead it's coasting along because it's not using any regenerative braking force. So be cognizant of the fact that, especially when you first get in your EV, the regen is going to act differently than you're used to all year long. So understand that and be ready with the friction brakes. Preconditioning, charging, regen. I mean, those are the big things you have to look out for. And understand your range is going to be less. If you're new to electric vehicles and this is your first winter, you're going to be like, oh, there's something wrong with my car, you know, because it always said I could go 210 miles. Now, all of a sudden, it's saying 180. Right. And the range is going to be less. And don't worry, you haven't lost those miles. They're going to come back in the spring. But people always freak out about that. I remember back in the early days when I was in the Mini E program and then the Active E program 10 years ago, and everyone was new to EVs. And there wasn't all these forums online of support where people could explain things. Everybody would bring their car back to the dealer in like November, and there's something wrong with my car. I could, every time I used to drive to work and I'd be at 50%, now I get to work and it's at 30%. Like, I can't get home. And that was on the early days. Some people even had to return their cars because they had enough range in the summer, but they didn't in the winter, and there was no public charging infrastructure. You were on a leash. You know, you could only go as far as that car could go. But now, and there's resources out there now for people to explain this. But understand your range is going to be less.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. So let's move on. Hey, on Wednesday, we released a midweek bonus podcast episode. It's a little shorter than our Friday show. We focused on the news that Tesla has begun a pilot program in the Netherlands that allows non-Tesla owners to charge at superchargers. All they need to do is set up an account on the Tesla app. Anyone can download the Tesla app, of course, and set up an account. And then they can use one of 10 locations in that country right now. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this today because we have a whole 30-plus minute episode on the Inside EVs YouTube channel that you can go check out. But Kyle was unable to join us, so I wanted to get his thoughts really quick on this. So, Kyle.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
What are my thoughts?
I mean, there's a lot there, so we don't get crazy into it. But first, like a couple of good things about it, a couple of bad things about it.
Yeah, well, look, my opinion's not going to change what's going on with this. So it's more or less what are we seeing, and there's some really great things, and there's some potential stuff that will go wrong. First of all, great things. Well, it means that if this were to happen in the U.S. with some sort of adapter, or I don't know, maybe Tesla might make the switch to CCS in the U.S. There's like hints here and there. We're seeing this open up. We're seeing the U.S. CCS adapter. We're seeing their J1772. Wall connector now going on sale for public. Before, this was only for commercial installs. They're seemingly embracing the standard more, and I can only hope the cars get retrofitted with CCS. I think the Tesla connector is better than CCS, no question, but I just want us all using one thing at this point. So site design seems to be the biggest issue at these superchargers, I think. I don't think we've seen any queuing problems at these selected superchargers that they've had.
No.
Some of them are, taking up two spots because the charge ports are all in different spots. And, this is just going to be a little bit of an awkward period. And you know, this can also help with feature site design. I think all superchargers should be pull through, like the one pictured here in this picture, right. Which was actually from an individual who worked for Fastned, right,
yeah.
Martin?
And yeah,
he was
yeah, yeah.
Super thrilled and like awesome about a competing network. So what's yeah. this? Who is this guy?
His name is Luke. And he immediately gave it a ton of praise, which is great. We think Fastned are a great operator, always publishing as much data as they can and putting it out there so we can learn about charge curves on their network, and also heaping a load of praise on Tesla, a competitor, saying, hey, it worked really well, very easy, very seamless. His state of charge was pretty high. So he's like, just ignore the fact that it didn't pull, you know, the maximum speed, which for third-party cars is 150 kilowatts, very respectable. And he had just good things to say about how easy it was. You arrive, you plug in, you open the app, or the app's open already, you select what it is, A or B, the number, then A or B, and then you're off and away. You hit go and you're paying, you know, it's around 60 euro cents, a bit more, a bit less. That's cheaper than Ionity. And I think it's pretty good. You know, it's more than, you can subscribe for 13 euros a month and pay like 20 something cents. And you know,
it's super competitive price.
I'm not being unsympathetic to those people that want, you know, value when they're charging. But because I don't do many road trips, and when I do, I've got a 3-year-old in the back, I just want it to work. I don't want to muck about to save a few pennies. And Tesla superchargers always work with Teslas, and they appear to work pretty well with third-party cars from all the ones that have plugged in. Of course, you know, if you've got yourself a Polestar 2, then the charge port is in the correct place. If you got yourself an e-tron, then, you know, maybe you're going to be blocking some blocking. Oh, I tell you what, the internet has gone wild this week with Tesla fans saying you're blocking me, and other people saying I'm paying like three times what you're paying. You should be grateful I'm funding your network. I'll park where the hell I want. It's been a hot mess, and I've loved watching it.
So we have
this is going to transfer to real life too. You know, I mean, look, over time, I've already seen some stuff at chargers, but maybe increasingly more so with more cars. Of course, people just in general don't know how to get along, you know, out in the wild. So, you know, right. we're going to see some Karens out there getting into some charging brawls and crashing cars into each other, and can't wait for it. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fun.
But at the end of the day, do I think this is a good thing? Yeah, I mean, look, here's what I think. The best thing for these site operators is reducing demand peaks, right? So you really want to level out your load. That's the easiest thing to plan for. It's the easiest thing to avoid massive demand charges. And I think this is a great way of doing it. I think it's, you know, if there's a plug sitting there that can physically charge a car and it's not being utilized, it should be open. The big question comes down to, okay, what happens in the U.S.? We have some really big pain points on the East and West Coast where some stations are just full. And I did not notice this at all in Europe. In Europe, the superchargers were very lightly used.
Yeah.
You guys travel much less than us. In Norway, we just posted our Model Y road trip around Norway, part one of two. Part two should go up tomorrow. And you'll see we stopped at 20 superchargers around Norway, and I think we saw like two other cars the entire trip.
There are no queues on superchargers over here, and they are busy. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes you'll be like, oh, man, I've got to share a stall and halve the power. If you're listening in California, that at least we get to charge. So we even at busy times, we don't see that. And honestly, they are building 8, 10, 12, 14 stalls at a station. So it's not like they're putting in small stations. And they're still, you know, my drive up to London, normally I'd get to somewhere called Fleet on the motorway, which is about an hour and 15 into my journey. They're now opening one at a city called Winchester, which is about half an hour into my journey. They don't even really need to open it, I suppose, if you know, they're putting actually some service stuff in there, so they might as well have a supercharging station next to their service facility. And it's great, and it's a really big, again, it is all in a row, so some of those mirrored stalls or the drive-through stalls, I think, will be less friction than the ones that are in a row against the edge of a car park or something. Because, third-party cars.
It's the pull-through is the way to go.
If you're towing or you got a big vehicle, we need to think about that in the future.
Yeah, so I think we just need big lots pull-throughs in smaller city places where maybe people won't be towing as much. Yeah, you could have the back-ins, but I think we'll start to see less and less of that. That was the nice thing about Norway. I mean, we talked about this when we were on the podcast. You just pull up and you pull through most of the superchargers that we visited, mostly because of snow removal. You know, we have a big issue here in the U.S. where snow plows will push the snow into the chargers. One, you can't get to them, but two, they'll actually bend the chargers back. And then every spring, they got to pull them back. And so this happens here in Colorado quite frequently. In terms of the use case, look, I'm so excited about it. Selfishly, I'd be able to get a CCS car to Salt Lake City from here, just north of Denver on I-80, which is crazy that two major metropolitan areas are not connected with, CCS infrastructure at all. And I think that's just truly insane. So, you know, that's why we have our Tesla. We love our Tesla. I love the Tesla supercharging network. You plug in, it works almost every time. And by the way, you know, we always, Tom, I want to get your opinion on this. We always talk about handshake times with Electrify America, with ChargePoint, with all of the other stations. But most notably, Electrify America has a really long handshake, and it just goes on and on and on, so long that sometimes it actually bricks the charging because it can't get all the information through in the amount of time that it has. Tesla with CCS, same standard. They have to operate on the same standard, I imagine. I plugged that sucker into a Model Y on CCS in Norway, and boom, instant. I was like, whoa, how is this possible? So what's the difference there, Tom?
I don't know, but I will tell you this. You know, I was in Germany a few weeks ago, and I stopped at an Ionity station with a Taycan. And to me, that took long. I was getting ready to unplug.
48 seconds on Ionity.
I was getting ready to unplug. I felt like I did something wrong, and it's the wheel spinning, and I'm waiting, and finally it started. That seemed longer than Electrify America even. So, you know, I guess it's the software inside, you know, network to network, Kyle. You wouldn't think it should take that long. A Tesla certainly doesn't. It'll be interesting to see with when they're opening up to the other brands. It seems so far, the short videos we've seen, that it doesn't seem like it's taking longer on these other cars charging at Tesla stations. So I don't know. You know, it's just
that's what we all need to use then. No cars are blowing up or anything with this shorter handshake time. Yeah. I mean, what they are doing is they're shoving the payment activation to the beginning of the session, which does take up a lot of the handshake time, right? So if you pre-activate a charger ahead of time, it will charge a little bit quicker because part of that's payment processing communications. I know we don't need to spend too much time on it. I think it's a great experiment. I love that we're seeing more utilization of chargers in general. I think it puts the pressure on the other networks to get better reliability because Tesla's reliability is second to none. And at the end of the day, is this something we'll see going on into the future with all these Teslas being built and this backlog? And you know, I think they're selling a lot more cars than they are supercharger installations, even though they keep building more superchargers. I don't know what their strategy is for this. Personally, I think I wouldn't really care if I'm waiting and someone's charging. Look, do I care if I'm waiting? Yeah, I hate it. I'd find another situation. But as long as chargers are being used and people aren't like charging to 100% and we're just all trying to get the juice to get our car along, it's fine with me. And but I do understand, you know, being a Tesla owner for years and years and years, this sort of sense of elitism that like, this is my network. I bought the cars. I tried to, you know, build it out. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but selfishly a little bit, it's like, yeah, I kind of get that. Like, this has just been our little bubble for the longest time. And, you know, EA is the public restrooms, you know, that's the public situation, but I'm using the private nice ones, so you know, we'll see.
Right. You're in the lounge,
but Kyle, you mentioned something that hopefully will come to fruition. You quickly kind of glossed over it, but you did mention it. You said hopefully, it'll force the other networks to improve their reliability. Because if you have the opportunity to charge at a Tesla supercharger, or another Electrify America, EVgo, whatever, and your experience is better at the superchargers, the next time you go to charge, where are you going to stop? So, you know, this could put pressure on the other networks to step up their game, which would be good for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, so Electrify America and others may have an advantage at some points for some vehicles because they can they can charge up to 350 kilowatts.
Whereas, yeah, but most of them can't right now. Signet chargers, is my understanding, they're capped at 150, which is most of the chargers across the country.
Right. Generally, but there are some where you can plug up like a Taycan up to 270 or whatever. Yeah.
It's so buggy when you get up to those speeds, though. It's, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's really not. I mean, look, I'm going to go take a road trip on one soon and with a high charging power car and see how it does. But in general, I would say my experience, anything 150 kilowatt and below charges fantastically on Electrify America. As soon as you go above that, things freak out.
And additionally, really quick, Dom, you know, we talk about, it accepts 300 kilowatts or 270 kilowatts. You have to look at how long the car actually charges above 150 kilowatts.
True. So, I expect it to improve over time, though.
You're right. But where it is right now, quite honestly, it doesn't make that big of a difference on most electric vehicles. If you plug in at a 350 kilowatt station or 150 kilowatt station, you're talking about, you know, staying there a couple of minutes longer.
Mm.
You know, you'd barely even realize it.
That's a fair point. Mm-hmm. Hey, I also want to mention before we move on that we have a couple great posts on this. Just like search supercharger on the main Inside EV's homepage, and you'll see like an Everything We Know post and a price comparison post, and one that shows you just how non-Tesla EVs can block some supercharger pedestals when they attempt to charge. There's a great graphic there. It shows exactly where the port is located in all these different models. So if that like figures into your buying equation somehow, it's a great little graphic to look at. All right. So since we're talking about chargers, Martin, we should hear from our sponsor. Okay.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America. And we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
All right. Hey, so our top official story of this week is the debut of the Volkswagen ID.5 rear-wheel drive and GTX. The good news is that if you like the ID.4 but wish it had more of a coupe shape, you're in luck. The bad news is you're only in luck if you live in Europe. It's still uncertain whether the ID.5 will come to the U.S. So as you may have guessed, the ID.5 is based on the MEB platform, same as the ID.3 and the ID.4. It's about the same size as an ID.4. The GTX is just a smidge shorter. The GTX is the all-wheel drive version. It's just a smidge shorter, 2 millimeters, while the Pro and Pro Performance rear-wheel drive is 15 millimeters longer. That's like, I don't know, like an inch or something, an inch and a little bit. So it launches next year in 2022. While there are three different motor configurations, the Pro gets 128 kilowatt or 172 horsepower motor. The Pro Performance gets 150 kilowatt motor, 201 horsepower, and the GTX gets a total of 220 kilowatts, 295 horsepower from the all-wheel drive dual motor setup. But there is just one battery available. That's the 77 kilowatt hour usable. So the coupe shape means that the ID.5 has a better coefficient of drag than the ID.4, but just barely. Like the Pro gets 0.26, the GTX gets 0.27, while the ID.4 gets like 0.28. So not a big difference there. The GTX, which is the red one here, if you're watching us on YouTube or on Twitch, you're looking at the red one, that is the GTX version. It gets a sportier looking fascia, the front end, and has the integrated DRLs on the sides there on the front. It also gets a sportier performance themed cockpit. And it's got some nice looking seats in there. The range, I'm not sure, like this is kind of strange, guys. So the range they mentioned in our story for the rear-wheel drive version is in WLTP, that's the European system of figuring out the range. It's an official 323 miles, which is significantly above the ID4, or that's 520 kilometers. And the GTX gets 298 miles, or 480 kilometers on the WLTP. I'm not sure how that changes, you know, because the ID4 in the US, EPA is like around the 250, 260 miles, depending on which configuration you get. Rear-wheel drive gives you more range, typically. So the ID5 also has a slightly longer wheelbase than the ID4, so rear passenger space isn't much different. There's a 12 millimeter less headroom in the back seat of the ID5. That's like less than half an inch. So Kyle, who do we have to bribe to get VW to bring the ID5 here? And can we bribe Dustin with Florida grown oranges?
All right, I will give you everyone's wrong number, because this is the worst thing ever.
Really?
That's a bit of an exaggeration. Okay. But yeah, why would you want a less practical, uglier version of a great car?
I think it looks better.
No, you are blind.
Does it have something?
It's got the pause and play buttons. The inside's nice, right? Like, it's all
It looks very ID4, right?
Here's the thing. It's no different than ID4. It's exactly. just less practical. I mean, I don't even know why they even call this something different.
The wheelbase is a different size even, though. It's like bizarre.
It is?
Yeah, yeah. It's like slightly different wheelbase. Like,
well, then it's different than Q4's situation, because Q4 e-tron and Q4 Sportback e-tron are like, exactly. I'm pretty sure, identical to the Q4.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw that too. So the MEB platform, they can, you know, elongate it slightly. Yeah. However they want.
So what is this one, shorter?
One is like slightly short, although the wheelbase is longer on this one.
This one's a little longer.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
But the overall length varies. The overall length is like, depends.
It just gets too saturated. It's too many models. You guys know me. You picked on the wrong person here to say anything nice about this car. you know that I am not a fan of these coupified SUV things.
Right.
I think there's only one that kind of pulls it off, which is the Cayenne Coupe Turbo GT thing, because then you get the fast one if you get the coupe. But you can get the same drivetrain that's in this, in ID4 GTX, and still have room for the doggos in the back with a roof rack, and it looks better. So, you know.
Well, they said the back area actually has more volume. It might not be shaped the way you like
it. Right. Yeah. And the point of a car is to be like a box on wheels, in my mind. If it's not a brown Volvo wagon, can anyone truly fall in love with it? I mean, no, I'm just exaggerating. But I don't see the point. I'm glad we're not getting it. I don't think Americans in general really need something like this.
In Europe, it'll
look good, though, because I do see a ton of coupified SUVs around there, and people seem to love leasing them.
Yeah, no, we'll love it. It's just the pricing starts to. So when you get to £47,000-£48,000, I love this. I think this looks great. I've never fully been on board with the roof line of the ID4, because it feels like they were drawing it and drawing it and drawing it, and then kind of lost interest. And like, either keep going and make it an estate car and a proper wagon shape. And it, I don't know. This for me is a very much more of a clear design in terms of, if you don't need that utility, this looks so much better than the ID4, but it's an expensive car. It starts to put you into the top Kia EV6 GT, puts you into Arniq 5, which we're getting the bigger battery, which you've always had spec'd for the US, but we now get the 77, not 73 kilowatt hours. They've added two more modules to Arniq 5 this week. So you get the Model Y up against it, and it starts to swim in some really interesting territory in terms of cars. It's not, again, it's not a value buy. It's because you really want it, and I don't know if it feels premium enough. Now, I've not had the ID4. We've just had the ID3 on the driveway. ID4 is a little different inside, but generally, if I was spending almost £50,000. I don't know if being inside this car makes me feel like I just spent 50 grand. Whereas I think the inside, but also a Tesla doesn't as well, but I think the inside of the Kia and the Hyundai and who knows what Genesis will come out with and some other kind of price points around there. I don't know. They just feel like, okay, we spent a lot of money here and it feels like it. This feels, it feels very utilitarian inside.
I think it's nice.
It feels
on the inside.
ID4 inside.
Well, yeah, and that's why I don't think that's
There's
premium
not
either.
Difference. It's not premium. You know, they're just to me, I lean more towards Kyle's opinion. There just isn't a big enough separation.
Wait, can you say that again,
two.
Tom? Just one more time.
Hey, yeah, let me hit record on this.
Every once in a while, Kyle and I have to agree. It's in our contract. I lean towards the why do this more so than oh yeah, I think it's a great addition. I don't dislike the way the back slopes down and looks as much as Kyle does. But I'm still kind of saying, okay, you know, this is next to an ID4 on a lot, and people are kind of looking at it and saying, you know, there's not enough difference. I'm not a product planner for an automobile company. It's probably a good thing, but I just don't see enough separation here to make it worthwhile making two vehicles. The size is almost identical. The back looks a little different. That's about it. I mean, the interior looks the same. Why not just make an ID4 like a new flavor and give that as like the premium version or the upscale version?
Like the ID6 that they make in China, the slightly larger.
I don't get it.
Yeah. We don't get here the ID6. I don't. And Europe may be getting the ID6.
Yeah,
actually.
That was the
ID6 looks good.
News this week. That's the 7-seater. Or you can spec it with 3 rows. They might make that in China and export it to Europe. Which, if you work for VW at a German factory, that is a bit of a sending a message,
right? So okay,
Martin, can you explain about that really quick? Because I saw Chief Deese was in some hot water with the union. Workers organization, and I know you've been following the situation. Now Dom has. Can you just give us a brief rundown? Because this seemed like everyone glossed over it, but it looked like a big deal.
Yeah, this is a mega deal. So a few months ago, Herbert Deese was coming to the point of he is on a contract, and it was an effective like a football manager, back me or sack me, and the board fully backed him, including the Works Council. Now, of course, VW have very loud voices on the board from not only the state in which they're based, who own a large part of kind of the local authority or council, if you like, but also the unions. Hugely powerful in Germany, hugely powerful within VW. And he came out and said, on his call that he did this week, he name-checked Tesla 13 times, which is unlucky for some, right? BMW, incidentally, did their results this week, and they called it that company in Texas. Wouldn't name them, right? VW, Deese will happily mention them by name and said, if we do not change, there will be 30,000 job losses here. And the Works Council, or the kind of the union power, are making his position look
tenuous.
Be careful what I say. Just tenuous. And again, it's facing another vote of, do we want him to? It's not this guy's fault for saying the truth. EVs will cause job losses if they don't shift in the right way. You can't blame him for saying it. Would be negligent if he didn't say it. Right. If he was like a lot of the other companies going like, everything is fine. Everything is fine, guys.
Right.
It's not. Right. There's going to be some people will lose jobs. Some people will retrain. Some people will retire early. But there will be fewer people doing. Well, there'll be nobody making engines at one day. Right. So, yeah, it's I really hope that they don't lose him because I think VW are on the right trajectory. But I know that if the union power pushes him out, I think that he has probably got a phone call coming very quickly from a certain another car company, because I think Elon Musk won't be at Tesla forever, and I could see him being a kind of, I don't know, what do you call him? COO? Or just CEO? Yeah. Like, Elon wants to launch rockets and go into space, and, you know, he can't do it forever.
Play on Twitter.
Yeah, Deese gets it, and he gets what Volkswagen needs to be, and he gets where the company has to go, and you know, we all, you know, focus on legacy versus these new startups, but I don't think people understand the depth of how these established automakers, when they are pushing as hard as Volkswagen, it's almost as if some people are pushing way harder than they would ever have to at a startup to get electric cars made. And I think Deese has been such a great guy in terms of just transitioning to electric. He's changed the entire shift at Volkswagen management to think about future mobility, think about different ways of vehicle ownership, think about autonomous integration into cars. And I think he would be amazing at Tesla. I think he would give the company a lot of stability. He knows how to speak both languages of new school and old school. And I think, honestly, he's Volkswagen's best asset right now. I'm That'd lucky to know him personally. And,
you hung out with him in Germany. When you were over here in Germany, you hung out with him, didn't you? And you had a good chat.
And now he's coming to the U.S. And so great, great guy. And really, he's a car enthusiast, which is awesome. But he also knows how the business works on the new side and the old side. I really hope this doesn't screw things up for him at Volkswagen, because I know it's such a big deal right now. But you know, we wouldn't have ID4, ID3, all of these cars, and really their future roadmap without him pushing so hard for it.
Last time I checked, his pinned tweet at the top of Twitter, and sorry, just to jump in, last time I checked, it was about, yeah, it's still there. So his pinned tweet on Twitter is from, you know, almost a month ago, and it's all about, we need a new mindset, a revolution. Here's a picture of our biggest competitor on stage. Like, this is not an accident why this is the first thing he wants you to see on his social media. It's, you know, if they lose him,
it's kind of remarkable.
It would be crazy.
It's kind of, you know, just remarkable that, you know, a competing CEO would have do that. But so to his point, he's trying to say that, you know, Tesla is making a lot more cars with a lot fewer people than Volkswagen is right now, and they can't compete and do that. They can't do that into the future. But then so I think that's a great point. And I'm like, yes, you know, the union, they're going to lose their jobs one way or the other. If they can't be competitive, you know, their jobs are going to go away. So cut now or cut later. But the union also makes a good point that part of the problem, the reason why they're not making so many cars is because of the global chip shortage. Management has not figured out how to get them chips to build the cars with, like Tesla has, you know. So it's not just, you know, the way that they build the cars, it's also the supply chain management, which is more, you know, the C-suite executives or whoever, and actually the buck stops at the top, really. So they do have a point, yeah.
Volkswagen's having severe supply chain issues right now, and right. It's really, really a mess. Not for everyone, yes, but I would say really they did not prepare for something like this as well as they should have.
People talk about, you know, over the years, people from the established industry have thrown shade at Tesla. Things like the screen, and said they're not even using automotive grade screens in their cars. And have there been issues like the yellow border issues? And have people? Yeah, there's not 2 million people, or you know how many Teslas are on the road now, are all saying, "Hey, my screen doesn't work," because it's basically a big iPad. So they take risks, and it pays off sometimes. It pays off more often than it doesn't. And when it doesn't, they make it right, not always instantly. So, you know, you've got to look at them and say, what are they doing well? And what do we want to carry on doing well as VW? Right. So I imagine there's lots of voices in the company that just dismiss them outright. Look, the only reason there aren't cars coming out of Giga Berlin right now is because they're still arguing over the environmental impact of the water, right? If that, and it's gone into now another public consultation, they're redoing it the third time. Shanghai was open by now. China works differently. If it wasn't for the environmental impact and the water issues, there'd be cars coming out of Berlin right now. So the fact that they're not facing this competition is not down to the fact that Tesla can't get their act together and build a factory. It's because they're waiting for the piece of paper that says we can start making them now.
So that's lucky. A German thing.
They're lucky.
I feel like there's a lot of just a resistance to change. But hey, Tom, you have some thoughts on this, I think, right? I can see
if Volkswagen loses Diess over this, you know, it'll be a huge hit for the company. He's very forward thinking. He clearly set a path for Volkswagen, you know, a few years ago, and was like, look, this is the direction the company's going to go in. And that's what you want your leader to be. You don't want somebody saying, well, you know, we think electrification, but you know what, we're also going to make hybrids, and we need to do this, and we need to hedge our bet. And, you know, the guy came in there and basically said, electrification is the future. We're going to reshape the company. We're going to be global leaders in electrification. And boom, they've been doing it. So you know, anything less, and the company is going to suffer long term. The workers that are so concerned about losing their jobs now, as I think you said, Dom, it's going to happen eventually. You know, and it's not just electrification, automation, manufacturing lines. It's everything converging at once. And yes, we do make more with less physical labor. You can't fight that. It's going to happen. But there's plenty of jobs with electric vehicles. It's not like Elon's vision of the alien dreadnought, whatever it was, where it's, you know, the machine making the machine, and, like Star Wars making the robot, the fighting robots or whatever. You know, we're not quite there yet. But yes, there will be less people on the lines. It's inevitable. But you want the company you work for to be healthy. And it's not like there needs to be massive cuts at a time. This is going to happen phased in over the next 10 years. And, you know, as people retire, maybe they won't hire as many new people. It's inevitable. And you can either fight it, or you can go along with it and try to make the best out of it and make the company strong for next generation. It would be a tragedy to me if Volkswagen decided to go in another direction and go for a new CEO. That would be terrible. But as you said, and not just Tesla, there'd be a lot of companies that would be at his door trying to bring him in.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, can I clear something up? Sorry, just on Randy's point. Now, where was it? Randy says some people care about clean water. There you go. I came across wrong. It's the only reason that VW haven't got competition today in terms of cars being made. I agree with whatever process is going on, by the way. So when I was talking about that, I was saying VW are lucky that they haven't got increased competition. I think it's right that there's a due process that goes. Absolutely right that we shouldn't be polluting or using those resources if they need to put something in place to make sure that it's recycled or treated. So if that came across wrong, absolutely they should be doing what needs to be done.
Yeah, and comparing it to what happens in China, you know, it's remarkable that they're able to build something that quickly, but that doesn't mean that's necessarily the right route to go. I mean, it's good for business, but it's not necessarily the best for the environment. We know, they're not going to face the opposition and the environmental regulations in China as strongly as you would in Germany or even in the U.S. So, you know, we're not advocating for that. It's good for the companies that can operate there. It gives them an advantage, an unfair advantage, because they probably just don't have to deal with a whole bunch of costs and expense that you have to when you build in places that actually care about clean drinking water and the environment. But it's a fact of life. That's what we're facing right now. You know, you can get things done much faster in China because you don't have the environmental regulations that you do elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, I just want to mention before we move on completely from Volkswagen that Simpson4T mentions on our YouTube chat, the ID.5 has the new charging curve, so 9 minutes faster from 5 to 80%, which that's a significant difference, right?
Well, don't all Euro 77 kilowatt hour cars have that now? Or they're like the software's rolling
out? It's coming.
If you haven't got it, it should be coming. It should unlock either 135 or 150 kilowatt peak and a better curve.
I heard 175.
Ooh, yes, please. We'll have that.
Yeah. Because 130 was on the mid-spec pack that I had in the ID.3. That did 131, 132. And so that's going to be probably the same curve because I think it's just downsized for the modules in the pack. So can't wait for it. It's going to be the best thing ever. When that thing rockets 175 kilowatts, 0 to 30% or so, and then from 30 to 50, it'll stay over 110, 115. That's a good curve.
Right. And we also didn't mention that much about the software either. The ID.5 comes with the new software package. It's like software 3.0, I believe.
So yeah, it's all be updated, right?
Right. And it's got over-the-air updates as well. So it's got Spotify and the Apple Music and driver profile stuff going on. But we should move on to something else because, man, we're chewing into our time. We haven't even touched our other two top stories yet.
Well, you picked the wrong top stories. I thought it would be...
I know, I did.
What's the most interesting one we've talked about? I don't know. Let's continue.
I wish you all would pick... I stay up... Yeah. That's on me. Anyway, it was just a month ago that Kyle and Tom got to tour the Lucid plant and take an air prototype for a spin. Now the company has achieved job one, making its first customer deliveries and becoming the first new and legit all-electric automaker. It held an event handing over maybe 10 or so Dream Edition cars. It plans to deliver about 520 of those altogether, which totally by coincidence is the EPA range for these cars. So that's that's 520 miles. So great. I can't wait to get a hold of those. For Kyle to get, or Tom to get a hold of those and drive it at 70 miles an hour for a range test. So later they had a little rally featuring maybe 20 vehicles. Some of those were probably prototypes. They drove from their offices over by Fremont across the bay up to Alice's restaurant on Skyline Boulevard in the Redwoods. And so, yeah, congrats to them. Any word, Tom, on when you or Kyle might get to spend a little bit more quality time with one of these?
So, no, Kyle and I were just talking about this privately. I'm personally a little disappointed. It seems like I had been in great communication with Lucid for so long. Hmm. And look, I understand they're busy now. They're doing the launch and everything. But it's like now I can't get a hold of them for anything. And coming up to the vehicle launch, it was just like, oh, yeah, you know, like we love you guys. And we can give you a car for this. You can get a car for that. And now it's kind of like little bit of radio silence, and I'm personally a little disappointed. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Right. That's kind of nice. We're showing on YouTube the screen or on Twitch the handover ceremony. There's, I don't know, 1 through 5. There's a bunch of, like, a dozen cars there.
I think about 20 cars on the first day, I think.
Okay. But on the behind the cars, they had, like, the names of the owners sort of, you know, marked out. So I don't know. We should do some Googling and see if we can't figure out who these people are and get some. I haven't seen a whole lot of owner first impressions yet on YouTube or anything. I don't know if these are the kind of people who would, you know, do that sort of thing. You know, it's like a luxury car. Maybe they don't have time. They need to spend their time working to make the money to afford this thing. I don't know.
No, I think it's more like it's the third car in their garage, Dom. So yeah, they would be able to loan it.
Right. Yeah, so we'll do some research after the show, or I will.
Yeah, if anyone knows of anyone who has a Lucid who, you know, is open to us testing the car, figuring out what it's all about, because no independent testing has been done on this car. You've seen independent reviews, but you've never seen accurate range testing, thermal management testing, charging testing, anything like that third party, which to me is absolutely insane that a brand new car is on sale in the hands of the public and no one knows how it works in the real world.
There was one video came up that's showing it charging, and so it doesn't charge quite as fast as it's supposed to yet.
We don't know if the pack was cold. We don't know all the other variables that could go into that, right?
That's your point. It's a one screenshot, and there's so many. We don't know if it's not unlocked. We don't know if the Electrify America station, for some reason, was just dishing out 251. So,
yep. That's why we need to do the testing. And,
let us tell the story.
Tom and I went back and forth on this. I think they're scared of their cars. Honestly, I don't think they have full confidence in their product, which is the only reason I would think why the only people doing deep, nerdy EV testing in the U.S. aren't getting calls back.
Mm.
And this is on Twitter. This person who posted that photo is called Tesla to Lucid. So the number two Lucid. So it tells you a little bit about their journey. And yeah, I'm looking in real quick to see if there's anything great. Yeah, not a whole lot new as far as like reports on what's going on. So yeah, we'd love to take this thing for do some testing with it. And since we don't want to wait on the company. If you have one, you know, give us a call. And yeah,
we're gonna start looking for owners' cars at this point. They can't stop us from testing, so we'll find someone willing to loan a car. We'll get it. And look, at the end of the day, our job's to test the cars, not to, you know, sort of pump up the PR departments all the time. So we're gonna get cars. We're gonna do the things we got to do, and should be great. Doesn't really matter where the car comes from. Lucid wants to give us one that they've gone through, that they feel is a good, accurate representation of a production grade vehicle that they feel comfortable loaning. Fine. If we want to go find a car that maybe was tampered with an owner and who knows how it goes, we'll go get cars from owners. I'm not particular, but we're going to report it as that's the car.
Right.
And we'll get one. We're going to get a hold of one sooner or later and do the full testing, range tests, you know, DC fast charge test. We, Kyle and I might even get together to do this if we get a car.
So right. Let's 500 see. Miles, man.
I mean, you might need to share the driving.
We might need to take turns for the range test.
Right. That's a long drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say pee in a bottle, but I don't want to mention that on the air, right?
I don't go to that length.
No,
you know, I do stop, and every now and then I'll get a complaint on when we do the range test. Someone will be watching the software, and they'll be like, "Tom, something doesn't jive with your range test because you know you say it's 70 miles an hour, but if you do the math, you know, you drove a half an hour longer than what 70 miles an hour would have taken. So were you going slower?" And I'm like, "No, I stopped twice on the turnpike at the rest stop to use the restroom." You know, like, is that allowed? Can I pull off the highway for 3 minutes and pull right back out onto the highway?
No, not a real test.
All right. Hey, so we haven't talked about Volvo trucks very much here, or maybe at all on the podcast, but I think it was worth some of our time just to take a quick look at what they're doing because... you know, it's okay. So, just to make sure there's no confusion, Volvo Trucks is a separate company from Volvo, the automaker. But they've been pretty aggressive on the EV front, and they last year announced that all of its models will have an electric version. It's had two electric models since 2019, FL Electric and FE Electric. They don't have, you know, super descriptive model names. They don't need to. It's a truck company, commercial trucks. In North America, it already sells the Volvo VNR Electric. And that's a class 8 truck. It has different configurations, but the picture they showed, I saw, it was a straight truck with a big box in the back. They look great, by the way. So that one that we have here already has got 150 miles of range from a 264 kilowatt-hour battery. So I was running through some of these specs, and some of them didn't make a lot of sense to me because that's like 150 miles of range with 264 batteries. But the other batteries get really big, but the range doesn't go up so much. But anyway, so now this new announcement, they've got three additional new trucks coming for mid-2022, the FH, FM, and FMX Electric. They come in a number of configurations with different cab types and battery sizes and axle configurations. The FMX, though, is basically a tipper, so it can be configured as like a dump truck or like a flatbed that tilts so you can like load heavy vehicles onto it. The battery packs can be as large as 540 kilowatt hours with ranges reaching 236 miles. That's for the FM Electric. They also have like 2 to 3 motors, and they use a modified version of their the same I-Shift gearbox that they use in the combustion trucks. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Also interesting is that the Tesla Semi, that's what would be like the natural competitor that, you know, the electric vehicle world might think of. They're supposed to have a 500 kilowatt hour battery and get 300 miles of range. So while these can have larger packs, they don't seem to go as far. I don't know, Kyle, we need you to get your Class A license so that we can do a proper range test. I suspect that the Volvo drivetrain may not be as efficient as Tesla's, but...
The Tesla vehicle doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean,
it exists on there's two of them flying around, and apart from that, it's a PowerPoint presentation that we got. So let's be careful with promised specs. I mean, all the Cybertruck specs are now offline, and the prices are now gone. So let's be careful with what was promised years ago. Tesla do a really good job of saying, "Hey, here's our thing," and everyone takes it as gospel. Like, that's at the minute nothing.
Right. So I suspect the real world range is going to be pretty close.
Maybe. Who knows? We'll see.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, we don't know until – same point we made about Lucid. No one knows anything until it's independently tested. I can't tell you how many times from established automakers, new automakers, we get the stuff, we get the car, and it turns out to be totally inaccurate information, either good or bad. We've seen it both ways. Porsche is always, you know, underrating their cars. Range on Taycan with EPA – and acceleration numbers, you can always far blow past other cars. For example, up here at altitude, even can't even match what they're doing. And this is just, you know, it's always a stat in a given condition in a certain scenario. So we can do a lot of the real world stuff. These trucks look awesome. You guys know I'm a fan of Volvo cars. I'm also a fan of Volvo trucks. The U.S. division, I used to live right behind, actually, the U.S. headquarters for Volvo Mack trucks in Greensboro, North Carolina, back in college. And I remember they had some electric prototypes running around and stuff like that back then. And that was really cool to see. This stuff, the Euro division, is totally separate from the U.S. division. But yes, I've been considering doing more heavy-duty testing, things like this, especially with spending more time in Europe over the coming months. I think we're trying to arrange these programs. I don't believe I will be able to drive heavy-duty vehicles in Europe. Their road classifications are a lot harder than the U.S.
Yeah.
In the U.S., I could probably go to a class and get a CDL because I don't have a permanent residence in Europe. We don't have a physical location there yet. I don't think I'd be able to get a Euro full, you know, heavy duty license to drive these things. But we can find someone who does. I can ride in the cab, make sure that we go through all the testing procedures. There's ways around it. And this is an area, you know, sort of just utility or commercial electric vehicles in general that we're going to be maybe not next year, but the year after when we have a little bit more bandwidth, really diving into.
Yeah, I see a lot of my US listeners and US followers of my podcast talking about trucking in a very different kind of cultural way than we have over here. Like, these guys and girls need to do 1,000 miles a day and you know, they're long hauling. Over here, we have really, really strict rules on driving. I believe it's 9 hours. In a day, and then you have to take at least, I believe it's 11 hours break. So not only are the distances here shorter, but the rules around drivers. So at some point, you've got to stop the truck and charge it. So it is different, you know, different over here. So that's why electric trucking, I think, is going to perhaps maybe come from Europe a little bit more in terms of it's just more useful over here in terms of a lot of the US cases at the minute are going to say, well, hey, we just need to stick with diesel for a little bit longer.
And the rules, to be clear, Martin, the rules in the U.S. have gotten much more strict recently with regards to how long you're allowed to drive. And I mean, you like lose your license if you drive like a couple minutes beyond what you're supposed to. Everything's being monitored.
Yeah, it's all electronic logs.
Here. Yeah.
It's not like the old days. People used to keep two logs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see, in my mind, that you're all Chris Christopherson in 1977 in Convoy or whatever film was.
That's what it was like. It was like, how fast could you get from New York to California? That's how much that depended, you know, how much money you made was like, how fast can you go cross country? Yeah. Damn the sleep, you know, just keep drinking coffee and get there. It was like Cannonball Runs for freight.
Yeah. And it was that way through COVID. Through COVID, they didn't do log checks when the roads, you know, when we were in lockdown and things like that. Truckers were just ripping, going, you know, hard across the country. Now, though, you see more trucks pulled over than cars, and not because they're speeding, but because they're doing weight checks, load checks, log checks, things like this. It's very strict here.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, they have not only do you have to drive through the scales and get weighed and different things like any commercial vehicles, we also have most vehicles have to go through this, like in Florida at least, like produce kind of pullovers.
Yeah, you got that checkpoint in all your borders.
Yeah, like even across, I used to drive from here to Lake City in like a big 26-foot box truck, and I'd always have to pull into the place, and sometimes they would, you know, take a look in the back, and sometimes they don't. It's like, it's just an extra little stop. It's not the Wild West like it used to be, for sure.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because I love those movies, but maybe not the best thing for our general.
Yeah, man, no, those are like, yeah, over, people not sleeping and taking illegal drugs and just to stay awake and all the, it's,
wow.
It's good that we've moved on from those days. Good movies, but you know.
Good movies.
Yeah. All right. So I just wanted to also mention.
We had a couple people mention, sorry to cut you off, Tom. A couple people have mentioned, have we talked about the Toyota BZ4X yet? Not in this podcast. It's not on our list. There's really nothing that new that came up with the vehicle this week. We have in the past, and we will once we get a little bit more information on it.
I think I'm going to be seeing that in person myself in just a couple weeks. I'm looking very much forward to that.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to let us drive. I kind of think maybe not. But
no chance.
It's going to be really great to kind of just see what they got going on in person. Oh, we got a little message here from Antonio Avendano from Volkswagen Chattanooga Operations. So we talked a lot about Volkswagen today. So hi there.
Get that place opened up.
Yes.
I'm sure they're trying.
Well, they're rocking with other cars right now. They're doing Atlas and Passat. I want
to
say.
Right. But they're tooling up the whole Chattanooga, expanding it to produce the ID4 there as well.
Yeah.
Which will hopefully, I don't know if that's
Dom,
not official.
You got to go there. That was
I
cool.
got to go there and visit, yeah, and get in.
I've only been on the outside.
Oh, really?
And that should. Oh, yeah, your video where you were touring around the perimeter.
I was snooping around.
Like some sort of stalker. That was quite I like that video.
I'm looking in. What can we see over here? But this was just on a road trip. I was just going through Chattanooga. So I was like, I got to go check this out.
Pretty cool.
I had an ID4 there, too.
And it should be open just in time. If you guys, if your lawmakers agree that extra little tax credit for cars made in the USA, it's another little reason to buy the ID4.
Yep.
Right. But it's not a union shop.
No,
right?
It's not.
Yeah, so it's only $500 for US made.
So it's not union there? I didn't realize.
Yeah.
It's not union. That's why, you know, so not to derail everything. So Ford is going to be open up a new thing in Tennessee, right? That's in Tennessee.
Yeah, it looked like a huge facility.
So
yeah, massive.
I have the feeling that they're not going to be unionized there when they do that. Maybe they are. They haven't said either way, which I find suspect, because usually if they are going to be that's going to be all over that news, you know, release.
Mm,
I don't know. It's just something that caught my attention, and I thought I'd bring it up.
Hey, Antonio, because he's working at Chattanooga, send us a picture of the final Chattanooga edition Passat. I don't know exactly what it's called, but they did a whole Passat dedicated to Chattanooga for the final run. It's pretty cool. It'll be this nice green color. It celebrates Chattanooga. It'll be kind of neat.
That's a nice town.
Because it's running out. This is the last of production.
Right. That's a nice little town that I got. The bunch of little towns in Tennessee that are just like, you know, Chattanooga.
Chattanooga is a great city, by the way.
Yeah, I was just saying, there's like not Memphis, not Nashville.
No, Nashville.
There's a couple of other smaller ones, though, not in Memphis or Nashville.
It's a great state, good whiskey, great driving roads. If you go to Eastern Tennessee, Western North Carolina, the best driving roads on the planet.
It is great. All right, so we should probably wrap it up. I did want to mention that Rivian has announced some, as part of their going public, by the way, for a lot less than we originally thought. I think originally they were going for like an $80 billion valuation, which is like totally nutso. Now it's like been tapered back to like $50 billion, which is still a little bit kind of crazy, but, you know, obviously way better than 80. Or more realistic.
It's still bigger than Honda. It's still bigger than Stellantis for a car that, of a company that has made nothing. I know they've been around for 10 years.
180 Rivian pickup trucks.
Yeah, and they want to make 1,000. They want to make 1,000 of them this year. So, but that's a valuation bigger than car companies shipping millions of cars that have been around for 100 years. And it's like, the world's gone crazy.
The stock market is not reality. It's not a reflection.
I don't pretend to understand it, to be honest with you.
I mean, Tesla is up over $1,200 a share. It seems like when Tesla gets on a roll, it just keeps. I think it'll drop down a bit after a little while, but right now it was like up $1,240 or something a share yesterday. And that's after they've done a 5-to-1 split. So, you know, from the original $20 that they, or $25 that whatever it was that they, the IPO'd at, that is now $5,000-$6,000. What? This doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, but then they also split, right? So it's not a direct linear curve.
Yeah, did a 5-to-1 split, and then
if you took that split out of the equation, it would be like a $5,000-some share price, right?
But that was like the news this week that somebody had done the math on if Hertz did buy all 100,000 cars in this order that's apparently not even an order, because Elon Musk said, oh yeah, they have, there's no contract with them, they can
they already have cars.
Like they've been going online and just paying their deposit and getting the car, and then there appears to be friction this week between Tesla and Hertz because Tesla won't prioritize them. Like, their customers are waiting almost a year to get cars, and so they're like, hey, join the queue, and that hasn't gone down well. So this 100,000 cars that isn't 100,000 cars, that was just a thing apparently, or an intention, you know, with or a memorandum of understanding or whatever, it added like $3 million valuation per car. So it added like each one of those was valued at $3 million to the company. And it's, I don't even pretend to understand what world we're in. So, hey, right. Massive valuation for Rivian, but, you know, I don't think Honda and Stellantis are losing any sleep
also,
over it.
Also, do you think Rivian's not letting the media test these cars because they're worried that we'll find stuff and it'll screw up their stock situation?
Yeah, they'll be in a period now of what's it called? Quiet? Yeah.
They're not allowed to right now.
Yeah.
There's an IPO. Dead silent.
I think after the IPO, we'll see a lot more activity from them. We better. Or we're just, you know, track
one
down. We need
to find an owner with one of these cars again. If anyone owns a Rivian and doesn't work for the company, I don't know if that exists. But if you do, please, we need to do some testing.
I've mentioned this before, Kyle. I have a friend that is one of the early reservation holders. And, you know, he's here in New Jersey, and he has told me, Tom, as soon as I get that, it's yours. You know, just, you know, you do whatever you want with it, you know. And he even said, you could come when it gets delivered, you know, come with me to pick it up.
Yeah, you should film the delivery immediately experience.
Start. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, supposedly he's one of the early reservations. He said he reserved it like the first day. And when I talked to Rivian, they said, well, it's kind of, you know, the early reservation holders, it's going to be location based. And where is he? And I said, New Jersey. And they said, oh, good. That's one of the higher priority places or whatever. I think they're somehow, depending on where you are, it's maybe because of logistics delivering them, they're going to prioritize certain regions. And so they said, oh, yeah, that's one of the early places. So, you know, we should be getting one pretty soon.
Yeah, maybe get in touch, see if there's any transparency as far like communications with the company with him to see, you know, if he's got...
There's nothing. We're in touch,
Tom.
There's nothing yet. No set right. dates.
I'm just anxious, man.
Yeah, so am I. Hey, I got a deposit on one, so, you know.
Oh, that's right.
As soon as I get to experience one, if it's good, that's what I'm going to go for. I'm going to cancel what I have on order and go for R1S. But no one knows if it's good. We don't know how it charges. We don't know really how it drives. We don't know how the deep software niggles. I don't know if you can drift it. That's a big deal. And so we'll have to see. No, I'm not joking. It really is. Yeah.
It is a big deal for you. It is.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you can drift the R1. Oh, it's got drift mode. That's what I'm saying.
It says it has a drift mode. So we need to see if that's just for dirt or pavement. But, you know, I have very odd qualifications for a car. You know, the car needs to do well on track. It's going to be our camera car. This thing's going to be on the limit of range, of charging, of traction, tire grip, and off-roading. Like, it's going to be pushed to its limit in every possible way.
Right.
I need to see if it can hold up to that for a year.
They should give you one, really.
No,
really? They should.
We shouldn't accept a
right,
whole
that's
car.
True. You don't want to be indebted to them.
We can take one for loan for a year, but we would never accept a free car. Yeah, we would have to go back to them.
All right. So we're a little over our time. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please, please, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at TomLog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe, please, and tap that bell icon for notifications because we are doing some pop-up shows midweek. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.